Welcome to our second morning of the Chukotai. We're leaving Vayikra Rabbah after today's session, which I'm having very strong, sad feelings about, but maybe for some people is exciting. I hear that especially for some shul rabbis, leaving Vayikra is exciting. I have different feelings, obviously. We're going to jump in to the very beginning of the Chukotai this time, where God gives the blessings and the curses, the brachot and the klalot. And what we're going to be looking at today is essentially mashup between the Chukotai, specifically the first pasuk in the Chukotai, and a chapter of Tehillim. And what the rabbis are going to be doing is imagining the Chukotai through the lens of King David, who they presume wrote this chapter of Tehillim. And the question that I want to get us started with is, when we read the Chukotai, what feelings does it evoke? And I want us to focus on that particular question, because I think if we pay attention, this can sometimes be one of the most emotionally charged parts of the Torah for reasons that we'll see soon. B'chukotai, if you follow my laws and faithfully observe my commandments. Now let's just pay attention to this. Elise, I'm going to drive you a little crazy. Can we scroll back up? This is a good translation of the meaning of the text. But I want us to pay attention to a few words in the Hebrew, in the Chukotai Telechu. The actual literal words are, if you walk in my statutes, if you go in my statutes. And I want us to pay attention to that, because both the idea of law and the idea of walking are going to be incredibly important for our Midrash. If you follow my laws and faithfully observe my commandments, I will grant your rains in their season, so that the earth shall yield its produce and the trees of the field their fruit. Your threshing shall overtake the vintage, and your vintage shall overtake the sowing. You shall eat your fill of bread and dwell securely in your land. I will grant peace in the land, and you shall lie down untroubled by anyone. I will give the land respite from vicious beasts, and no sword shall cross your land. We're going to, for the sake of time, skip down to the end of this. I will be your God and you shall be my people. I'm on the third to last line of this first paragraph. I will be your God and you shall be my people. I am the Lord your God who brought you out from the land of Egyptians to be their slaves no more, who broke the bars of your yoke and made you walk erect. Now let's jump down to the second paragraph. But if you do not obey me and do not observe all these commandments, if you reject my laws and spurn my rules so that you do not observe all my commandments and you break my covenant, I in turn will do this to you. I will wreak misery upon you, consumption and fever, which cause the eyes to pine and the body to languish. You shall sow your seed to no purpose, for your enemies shall eat it. And this goes on for quite a while, but for the sake of room on the source sheet, I skip to the end. Yet even then, when they are in the land of their enemies, I will not reject them or spurn them so as to destroy them, annulling my covenant with them. For I, the Lord, am their God. I will remember in their favor the covenant with the ancients, whom I freed from the land of Egypt in the sight of the nations to be their God. I am the Lord. These are the laws, rules, and instructions that the Lord established through Moses on Mount Sinai between himself and the Israelite people. I want us to pay attention right now. What feeling does this bring up in you? And I'm really gonna hark on that particular question. I sometimes spend a good amount of time at the beginning of the year explaining the difference to my students between feelings and ideas. Let's focus here on feeling words. What feelings are coming up for you? Alex Goldfarb, it's pretty anxiety-inducing. Yeah. If you want to say more about what's bringing up the anxiety for you, I would love to hear. Who else? What feelings are coming up? Ariana Varo's distress. Alex Goldfarb followed up, lots of pressure to follow the mitzvah. Yes, and lots of dire consequences if you don't. Bracha Lieberman, punishment and connection. I'm curious to hear more about connection. Robert Niederman, fear of punishment, terror. Yeah, terror resonated very strongly with me. Jane Susswin, abandonment, interesting. Alicia says, but also reassurance, God will be there with us even if we are punished for violating the mitzvot. Meaning even in the land of your enemies, that part you find reassuring. Bracha Lieberman, even with wrongdoing, says that God is with us. What we saw here, I think, was a little bit of a dialectic between the anxiety that this brings up and the reassurance at the end. And part of what we're going to be looking at is how the Midrash addresses those feelings and how the Midrash actually brings your attention to those specific feelings. Before we jump in, Robert Niederman says, these laws are going to be difficult, so we need a really powerful negative consequence. Yes. And the Midrash is also going to pick up exactly on that. All right, let's get started. If you walk in my statutes, this is what is written in Psalms 119. I considered my ways and I turned my feet to your testimonies. So a little bit about Psalm 119, incredibly long. And essentially, what I like to describe as a love song to the Torah and a love song to the mitzvot. Let's jump to the comment for a moment so that we can get a little bit of a feel for why it's a love song. Do not utterly take the truth away from my mouth, for I've put my hope in your rules. I will always obey your teaching forever and ever. I will walk about with ease. I have turned to your precepts. I will speak of your decrees and not be ashamed in the presence of kings. I will delight in your commandments, which I love. That line particularly, I think, is just so full of emotion and true love, specifically for the mitzvah. I reach out for your commandments, which I love. I study your laws. Remember your word to your servant through which you have given me hope. We're going to scroll down a bit till it 59, so that we can see the specific pasuk that we're zooming in on. I've considered my ways and I have turned back to your decrees. So there are two key words that our midrash is going to be focusing on. The first is the word, the words, drachai and raglai. And the midrash picks up on those because this is a verse that's speaking about commandments. And seems to have a parallel in our psukim to telechu, right? We pointed out that the word telechu is very specific. It has to do with walking. And here we have two words that have to do with walking. The second word that the Midrash is going to be playing with very strongly is chashavti. What does it mean that you considered? What are you considering here? And how does that line up with our verses in the Chukotai? Let's keep going. David said, Master of the universe, on each and every day I would consider and say, to place X and to the home of Y I am walking, but my feet would bring me to the synagogues and to the house of study. This is what is written, I considered my ways and I turned my feet to your testimonies. I find this incredibly sweet. The Midrash is going very literal here with the word telechu and the walking theme. And what the Midrash is saying is, what does it mean that I considered my walking? These are actually two separate things. When I actually think about what I'm going to be doing, I have all of these ideas in my head that are all the things that I need to get done in the general world. But force of habit, essentially, or my body actually working against what my brain has planned, brings me into your ways, brings me into your statutes, by bringing me to Shul, by bringing me to the Beit Midrash. Let's pause here. I want us again to pay attention to feelings. When you read this line, what feeling does it bring up in you, and can you identify why? Francine Schraga said to everyone, David's unconsciousness took him to Torah. Yeah, that seems to be very much what the text is doing here. And it also seems to be opening a new possibility. This doesn't have to be so hard. This doesn't have to be so difficult. You don't always have to be thinking about how to do right at every time. Trust yourself to some extent that if you build these habits, you'll end up doing what you need to be doing, and that's okay. Melinda Zalman, The Longing of Someone in Love, Carrying Him to His Lover's House, beautiful, very Shira Shirin. Alicia says, confused. We aren't like the Christian monks who remove themselves from the world. We have work to do in the world as well. We can't help to perfect the world if we never do anything in the world. Yeah, I think that that's a really interesting point. You're actually pointing out also, this is King David. He presumably has a lot of work to do. What's happening to all the things he was actually supposed to do that day when he ended up in Shuler, the Beit Midrash? Robert Niederman, I considered, it seems to sound like he's making yeshiva. He's changing his ways. Interesting. And we're going to see exactly that interpretation further on. That's very interesting. Michael Mantel says, Shema. Yeah, there's a lot here that's very Shema oriented when you're walking on your way. Exactly. Carla Worrell says, like being drawn into a river current, drawn to God. That's beautiful. Thank you. Arlene Berger, I think in reply to Alicia, says, why assume that they are at odds with each other? Beit Midrash doesn't mean 100% of the time. And also said body, memory, and activity. Yes, I think that that is incredibly important for understanding this piece. Can we actually get out of our heads enough to trust that the body memory that we build up will be enough sometimes in the fulfillment of the mitzvot? The Midrash is essentially taking us out of our heads and saying, trust yourself, trust that you'll be doing the right thing. Let's continue in the Midrash. Line 3. Rav Huna said in the name of Rabbi Acha, I considered, so focusing on the chashavti in the chapter of Tehillim, the giving of reward for the fulfillment of the commandments, and loss for the sins, and I turned my feet to your testimonies. So Rav Huna is actually interpreting this in a completely different way. For him, it is exactly about what is going on in your head. You know how to make this easier? Read the text. There's a very clear reward and a very clear punishment. And once you actually sit down and consider that, this becomes easier. The natural result of that is I turned my feet to your testimonies. This is not necessarily an intuitive religious inclination for me, or an emotionally helpful one for me, but I want us to, I'm curious if this is religiously or emotionally helpful for anyone else when they're reading this. I'm very curious. Use the chat to answer. Robert Niederman says, carrot and stick, very much so. And Melinda Zalman just says, flat out, no, which I appreciate. But part of what I appreciate is that this immediately following the previous one makes us extra acutely aware of just how different people's religious pathways and inclinations are. What we did in line 2, which is this actually doesn't have to be so hard, it doesn't always have to be in your head, is immediately sidelined by line 3, which says, actually for some people being in your head and thinking about reward and punishment all the time is exactly what you need and is exactly what is emotionally and religiously helpful. Alicia says, maybe it is helpful for people who aren't motivated to observe mitzvot in any other way, definitely. Thinking about what consequences are to actions does resonate with me. Interesting. So if we take this out of the realm of simply imposed reward and punishment, but start thinking about these as there are always consequences for our actions, that's resonant. Mal Gelman, righteous body inclinations and movements will lead to appropriate outcomes, good and bad. Francine Shraga, fear can motivate up to a point. And Alicia points out not just fear, it also mentions reward. Arlene Berger also says, feels a little bit like keva and kavanah. Sometimes we're just in the flow and doing what we are used to doing, and sometimes we really tap in to the thought behind what's going on there. Robert Niederman also says, I like the idea that I will be lost if I go away from my tradition. That's very powerful. And I want to come back to that idea as we go on in the Midrash. Let's go to line 4. Rabbi Menachem, the son-in-law of Rabbi Elazar bar Rabbi Avin Avina, said, I considered what you wrote in the Torah, if you will walk in my statutes, and what's written there, and I will give peace in the land. Likewise, and if you will not listen to me, what is written there, and I will add to punish you. So this seems to be very much in the realm of what came before. Rabbi Menachem is similarly saying, what does it mean to consider? It means to consider God made very clear what the reward and punishment is. And that is actually what the piece of Tehillim is saying. It's saying, think about, when I think about what God spelled out as reward and as punishment, that makes it easy for me to do the right thing. Let's keep going. Rabbi Abba, the son of Rabbi Chia, said in the name of Rabbi Yonatan, I considered the blessings and I considered the curses. So again, reminding ourselves on the word, on the root Cheshev. The blessings are from the first letter, Aleph, to the last letter, Taf. And the curses are from the letter Vav to the letter before it, Hey. And not only that, but they are backwards, in reverse order. So to understand this, we have to scroll all the way back up to the Hebrew. Let's do that. Let's just take a look at what is being pointed out in this line. Im bechukotai telechu. The introduction to if you do the right thing starts with an aleph. And if we read all the way to the end of that section, it ends with the word v'olech otam kumimiyut. That last word ends with a taf. So the brachot are from, the blessings are from, all the way from aleph to taf. Whereas the klalot, the curses, start with vav, ve'im. So the Midrash is actually pointing out very cleverly that there seems to be almost a deliberate, you can read it simply as a bridge, or if you live within the world that the Midrash does, in which Torah is not only made up of words and sentences, but made up of letters, which have equal weight, even in their own isolated selves, it seems to be actually deliberately starting the curses, not with Aleph, but with Vav, and only going until the words Beyad Moshe, which ends with a hey. So we have the blessings going from aleph to taf, whereas the curses only go from vav to the letter before it, hey. And we'll see what meaning the Midrash makes of that in a moment as we scroll back down. Rabbi Avin said, the intention is that God is saying, if you merit it, behold, I will reverse for you the curses into blessings. When is that? When you observe my Torah. This is what is written, if you will walk in my statutes. So what meaning is the Midrash making of the fact that the brachot go from aleph to taf, whereas the klalot, the curses, only go from vav to hey? The brachot, the potential rewards and blessings that you get for following the mitzvot are all expansive. They go all the way through the alphabet. Whereas the klalot are not only much more limited, which they don't seem to be in the plain text. In the plain text, the klalot are very creative and expansive, to say the least. But by looking just at the isolated letters that they begin and end with, not only are they more narrow, only from vav to hey, but they're reversible, because hey actually in the alphabet comes before vav. And what Rabbi Avin is saying here is actually, there is possibility here that curses can actually turn into blessings. You're never actually stuck. There's always a way of going backwards. There's always a way of actually fixing in some way. Let's pause here for questions, comments, and also, how does this last bit, the bit about the letters, strike you? I'm curious both about people's reactions to what the Midrash does by focusing on letters as opposed to words, but also on this idea. We talked at first about what are our feelings when we read Bechukotai. What feelings is this section tending to? And how is it perhaps changing them? How is it perhaps offering a different framework? Bracha Lieberman, chukot are the things we don't understand and take on. Faith is what holds us up. That's beautiful. Jane Susswine, do the rabbis address the issues of bad things happening to good people who follow the mitzvot? Often, just not here. Robert Niederman, maybe God is trying to get our attention. He's trying to say, hey, listen to me. Yeah, it seems to be that is part of what Rabbi Avin is saying. And also, once God gets your attention, God wants to turn curse into blessing. Jeff Block, mind-bending. I'm really curious about that. Ariana Burrows, rabbis don't want us to despair, but to keep trying. I'm so interested in the fact that you picked up on that word. We're not going to look at this inside, but for people who want to look at it after, there's a comment on the side that I brought from the Eitz Yosef. The Eitz Yosef is a 19th century Russian commentary. By Russian, I mean he is from Russia, not that he wrote in Russian, on the Midrash. And for him, this bit at the end is all about despair. It is all about the religious perils of despair and how easily the promise of the curses can raise that. If you get stuck inside your head too much and really think all the time about punishment and the idea of punishment, and are always evaluating, am I in danger of being punished right now? What the religious perils of that are? And for him, this at the end is actually all about guarding against despair. It's all about God does not want you to despair. God actually wants you to understand that nothing that is a curse is permanent, and that you are never actually stuck in your ways. There are always ways to come back from something that you're doing wrong. Melinda Zalma, it takes away the helplessness that comes when you're mired in the curses that come from making the wrong choices. Exactly. When there feels like there is no way out. Something I always appreciated about this class is that when I saw that comment from the Eitz Yosef, it was not intuitive for me, and people are just intuiting that explanation. It really opens me up to, I should actually have a much wider lens when I read commentaries, that they're actually doing very good interpretation of the text sometimes. I love that about this class. Thank you all. Bracha Lieberman, that you can go back reminds me of tshuva, going from vav to hey, not giving up. Very much so. Alex Goldfarb, do we take something from the fact that it's vav and hey specifically? It could have been any two letters that were next to each other and reversible, but it's the last two letters of the divine name. That's fascinating and didn't occur to me at all. I think that's really interesting. Alicia says, or it is how even bad things that happen can have a silver lining. Like, we obviously wouldn't call COVID-19 a blessing, but because we are trapped at home, we get to do online learning we wouldn't have done. I will definitely say that the online learning has been a blessing for me personally, so I very much feel that. Arlene Berger, need to look at the Zohar story about the why the world was created with the letter Bet. Gives an explanation for each letter, wondering what Vav and Hey stand for. That's a great place to look. I actually don't think I've ever learned that inside, so I'm curious. And before we wrap up, Michael Mantle says that the last word to a really dark version of our relationship was Hashem. I think you mean by focusing purely in on the curses. Yeah, I think that can easily go very dark. Bracha Lieberman, Michael's comment fascinates me, as sometimes we don't understand where we are with God. Whew, that really hit home for me, particularly right now. And I think that is part of what Rabbi Avin is trying to salvage for us. In the moments where I feel like I'm in the darkest place with God, in the moments where I also feel like God is in the darkest place with me, at least having in mind that is not permanent, that is something that God can easily reverse and wants to reverse. We're going to close up here, but I want to end by saying this. I usually, when I'm teaching, very deliberately avoid the sections about the blessings and the curses. I think as 21st century people, they're often very difficult to tap into emotionally. And It felt very important this year when it can so easily feel like we're living in a time of curses. I keep seeing ridiculous memes about how the murder hornets, have people been reading about the murder hornets that now apparently have gone to North America, is the last sign that we're actually living in, God forbid, the 10 plagues or something along those lines. And what I really want to leave us with is the feeling that the fear that we're living in curse right now is a natural human fear and a natural religious fear that these rabbis in this midrash have obviously grappled with, both when they're reading the Chukotai and possibly in their own lives. And the frameworks of dealing with that, particularly the last framework of nothing is permanent, there are ways of coming back, and specifically the urge to read Torah through a lens of God never wants curse to be permanent. God wants these things to be easily reversible. And that's where I want to leave us today. Thank you all for learning with me this morning. I hope that the rest of your week feels like a blessing. And I hope to see you on Monday morning. Thanks, everyone.